This decision should be a no-brainer. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today, as usual, is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Sitting here dumbfounded as always about the stuff I'm reading in the news.
Well, you know, but that's the thing, Chuck. If you just sat there and just read what the news was feeding us, we probably would be a little dumbfounded. But because we, and we hope our listeners, are reading more deeply behind the headlines, maybe even reading, say, the original source documents, like our Declaration of Independence and our Constitution, they're starting to see some things that the media doesn't want us to see. And one of the things that we're going to talk about today is something that I think a lot of people are getting blinded to by the media coverage that's happened around this particular issue. The issue that I'm talking about, obviously, Chuck, is the United States Supreme Court held oral arguments just this last week on the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, also lovingly known as Obamacare. And the justices had a field day with the U.S. Solicitor General and peppered him with numerous questions. But Chuck, if you actually just read the headlines, it would sound to me like they're missing a fundamental point here.
Well, if you actually listen to some of the questions that were asked, and we talked about this in my class on the Constitution last week. And by the way, you should take one of our Constitution classes if you're out there listening. And if you live somewhere in the central Ohio or southeastern Ohio area and you would like us to teach a class, give us a call or contact us through our website, www.principledpolicy.com. That's why we do these classes, so we can learn these things. Actually, one thing I would like to say is it sounds like the Supreme Court had three field days with the Solicitor General.
Well, that's true.
Sounds like he probably had three very bad days and at least two very sleepless nights, because after the first day, I'm not sure I would have been able to go home and sleep after the beating that I'd taken, even from allies of the president, in the questioning that I heard from the bench.
Basically, what we're getting down to is 3 days of testimony, of deposition, of back and forth with the Solicitor General and the court's 9 justices. And it all, we talked about the individual mandate, which is, you know, as Obama calls it, the centerpiece of his plan. And how, if you could force somebody to buy insurance, you can force them to eat broccoli, I think was one of Scalia's famous quips from last week. But Chuck, it seems to me that the vast majority of the justices are missing a fundamental point about the issue before them. The Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, i.e. Obamacare, a statute passed by the United States Congress in 2010, this decision by the court should be a no-brainer, Chuck. Honestly, three days of discussing the merits of it, and I had my class that I teach down here in southeastern Ohio, and somebody brought up in the class, well, isn't it horrible that the justices just stated that they weren't going to sit there and read the 2,800 pages of the statute? And I thought about it after the class was over with, and I thought, well, maybe that justice was signaling without coming right out and saying it what should be obvious to all of them if they've ever read the United States Constitution. And that is, and Chuck, I'll let you hit the punchline.
The justices have basically said being forced to read 2,800 pages of the health care law would be cruel and unusual punishment, and thus a violation of the Bill of Rights.
Well, but the point is they don't even have to read that far, Chuck. That's right.
That's right. They don't have to read that far, because the bottom line is that this is not one of the enumerated powers.
That's correct. Congress can only pass laws that hope to remain declared constitutional or within constitutional boundaries if they are part of the Article 1, Section 8 powers of Congress. Now, you know, Chuck, we teach our classes. I know you teach your classes. I teach mine. And for any of our listeners out there, when you get home or wherever you're at, if you can find a pocket copy of the Constitution, pick it up. Look at Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. And please, if you can find any line in Article 1, Section 8 that says Congress has the power to regulate your health care or anybody's health care for that matter, please let us know. You will win our entire Institute for Principled Policy back library. Okay? We'll give it to you for free because you're not going to find it in there because it is not an enumerated power of the Congress.
One of my students basically brought up, and she asked me if I'd seen it, and I said, yes, I did, and she goes, did you notice? And I beat her to the punch. And I said, are you talking about the questions on the quote-unquote necessary and proper clause? Because that's where everybody's going. Well, the necessary and proper clause was being treated in the questioning as if it was an entirely separate section of Article 1, Section 8. And in fact, what the necessary and proper clause is a phrase that says the Congress shall have all powers necessary and proper to implement their powers
over... The foregoing powers.
The foregoing powers, that's right. So it's the ones that are listed in Article 1, Section 8. And, of course, they also try to go to the General Welfare Clause of Article 1. Sorry, folks. The General Welfare Clause is not the specific welfare clause. And what we're talking about is the specific welfare of individuals. General welfare has to do with basically making business conditions good, making sure that people aren't regulated out of business. And it means exactly the opposite of what the Congress has been trying to do with it for the last 100 years or so.
And Chuck, this is real simple. Once you get to the fact, our organizing governing document, the United States Constitution, there's only one other thing that the justices need to do, and that is to declare the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act unconstitutional in its entirety, from the individual mandate to the death penalty, from the page 1 to page 2800. It's all unconstitutional because it is not a valid law.
Well, isn't it amazing? Now, you and I have both talked about this. First of all, that nobody is thinking about it in that direction, except it seems like possibly Justice Scalia, who's making noises that the whole thing just ought to be chucked out.
Well, and he's absolutely right, and they have the authority to do so. But if we can't get 5 of those 9 members of the United States Supreme Court, those people that Obama, you know, came out and said, those unelected people who would be taking an extraordinary and unprecedented step. No, it's not extraordinary or unprecedented to read the Constitution. Well, maybe, okay, I take it back, Chuck. That probably is what he's talking about. The extraordinary and unprecedented step of actually reading the text of the Constitution and using it to interpret the law instead of vice versa.
Which hasn't been done in the Supreme Court since, around the time of...
Because that's the doctrine of the Constitution.
Well, since... probably about, I think the last time the Constitution actually was read by the justices was about 1937 or 38, right about the time of the court packing scheme when the Supreme Court was constantly overturning Roosevelt New Deal programs. They were actually using the Constitution as the excuse for throwing the things out and actually naming sections of the Constitution. And then right after the court packing scheme, suddenly the Supreme Court, quote unquote, saw the light.
And read between the lines of the Constitution we're going to lose our power here or our authority because Roosevelt's going to hack the court and put people on who are going to keep us from being able to use the Constitution.
Exactly. So basically, anybody who tells you the Supreme Court is fearless and has absolutely no fright when it comes to what one or the other checking branches can do, don't kid yourself.
Oh, absolutely. Now, Chuck,
they wet their finger and stick it into the wind just like the rest of the branches in the federal government.
Well, that's because we've lost the sense of checks and balances and the sense of proper jurisdictions. Right. You know, our founders could have just thrown together a letter and said, here, you all figure it out from this. But what they did was they gave us a document that had different articles which created different specific limited powers for each of the 3 branches, put checks and balances between them, separated them, but gave them some oversight over keeping the other 2 branches from running away with power. That's the genius of our Constitution, Chuck. Now,
yes.
I think that our Constitution is about to be extremely tested in this, and I say that because of the comments that our president, Barack Obama, said in relation to sending his warning to the court about their unprecedented and extraordinary step, because he said this, and he said, ultimately, I am confident that the Supreme Court will not take what would be an unprecedented, extraordinary step of overturning a law that was passed by a strong majority of a democratically elected Congress. Well, yeah, that's all fine and well, Chuck, but neither one of those two things, strong majorities or democratically elected Congress, means anything if they're not staying within the bounds of Article 1 of the Constitution. What he's trying to do is he's trying to set up that the court is going against the will of the people, and therefore they're dangerous.
Well, okay.
Obama is playing a very, very, very savvy game here.
Oh, sure he is, but let's look at the facts. How many votes did it pass by in the Senate?
I'd have to go look that up right offhand. I'm not.
Barry, I think it was 51-49.
Yeah, okay, so I think I knew it was close, but I wasn't sure exactly if it was 52-48, 51-49. So
I'm pretty sure it was 51-49, and the fact is that a number of those votes later on in 2010 that it was passed, those guys lasted about another month and a half in Congress, and then they were shown the door. And a whole bunch of people in the House who voted to pass it also were given their retirement papers.
Brushed right out the door. That's right.
That's right. So much for the overwhelming majority of sentiment in the country for passing Obamacare. It just wasn't there. And in fact, it cost the jobs of people who were several term congressmen. In fact, if you'll remember, guys like Bart Stupak, who made it possible for this thing to pass, essentially went home with his tail between his legs, I think, in the next election cycle, and basically said, I'm not running again.
That's right. That's right. But, you know, Chuck, it's also interesting. Our president is playing an interesting chess game with this, because he also basically, when he was making these comments, he made the argument that, well, conservatives for years have been arguing that these unelected justices of the court shouldn't be making the law, and they should be interpreting the law. And so, therefore, if they overturn his health care plan, they're actually being activists and making law. So what he's basically trying to say is, my health care plan is untouchable, and if you change any of it, you're changing the law. Well, that's a great argument, except it's an argument with no basis, because the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, Charles, because it has no foundation in the enumerated powers that Congress has available to them to make laws necessary and proper, is no law at all. So for him to make this assumption is kind of begging the question, isn't it?
Well, listen, the whole thing is begging the question. Obama, the former constitutional law instructor, this man actually taught constitutional law classes, is quoted as saying the Supreme Court overturning his health care would be unprecedented, that the Supreme Court can't overturn law. Well, Barry, we might have a good constitutional discussion on whether or not they actually have the right to overturn laws or not. But the fact is, that's been a fact since Marbury versus Madison.
Yes, it has.
That's 1803. How he missed that, I don't know. Where was he
You and I both know, and I think our listeners are well aware. Yeah, that's right. It's 1803.
Yeah. Where was he the day they talked about that in law school?
Chuck, what we know, and I think our listeners probably know, is that the Supreme Court is there to interpret the laws in light of the Constitution. When Congress passes an act, and let's make sure we're clear on this, an act, not a law, and if it does not comport with the enumerated powers that they have in the Constitution, it is no law. It is unconstitutional. It's an unconstitutional exercise of extraordinary power that the Supreme Court is by design there to check and keep in balance and to rebut if they try to push on the American people something that they have no authority to do in the first place, like Obamacare. I don't care if the president loves it. I don't care if the AARP loves it. I don't care if you've got tens of thousands of people marching in the streets. If it isn't something that the founders gave to our Congress the power to legislate over, it doesn't belong to the federal government. It is retained by the states or by the people themselves directly. That's the 10th Amendment of the Constitution.
And with that, we're out of time. Join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.